Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
For this week's industry review, we're uncorking the business of wine in Ireland. Yes, from independent retailers to the expert palate, we'll be exploring how trends, taste and commerce shape what ends up in your glass. Delighted to be joined this afternoon by Michelle Lawler from the Nude Wine Company. Also joining us is my old friend Tom Durley, food and wine writer and consultant. Also joining us is James O'Hara from Premium Wines Limited. Tom, we might start with you as the elder man in the room, as they say.
The elder lemon, yeah.
maybe give us an overview of where the wine industry is at in Ireland in terms of our consumption and our attitudes to wine.
Yeah, it's a good question. We're still very keen on New World wines, particularly the wines of Chile. I'm always a bit surprised at how far ahead Chile is of Argentina, because both countries are producing very good wines at very good prices. Having said that, I think the sort of French classics are not exactly having a moment, but coming a little bit back into the limelight, possibly helped by restaurant trends. The thing that worries me, Bobby, is that there is new legislation involving labeling for wines, health warning labels for wines. And I mean, I've got no problem with the notion of putting a health warning on any product that contains a toxin, and alcohol is a toxin, certainly. But the way that the required labeling for wines has been drafted means that small producers, you know, the producers mainly in Europe who produce small quantities,
yeah, they won't have the facility to basically enable this.
They simply can't do it, because yeah. You see, wine, unlike beer and spirits, wine varies from year to year, and its calorific content, its alcohol intake content will vary. And in fact, one of the big producers in Argentina, Catena, has already said, "Oh, we just can't be bothered."
Okay.
So
we'll come back to that in a minute, Tom.
We'll
come back to that in a minute. Let me talk and introduce Michelle Lawler from the Nude Wine Company again, Michelle. You're very welcome. I was out in your premises a number of years ago. You'll remember maybe when it is or when it was, but you're somebody who has a wine business, but you consider yourself a tech company that sells wine.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right. So I've been in the wine industry since 2001, when I was 18 years old. So you can do the maths. Having been around the world, London, Hong Kong, back to Dublin, doing online wine. And we have found, I suppose, totally different to what Tom is saying. I'm so sorry, Tom. So the trends that we see, and I would say our consumer is someone who's sitting at home, too busy to go to the shop nearly. They want it home delivered, and they're not into New World wines, and they're not really into French classics either. They're into discovering all these new and exciting wines.
And from where?
God, we see huge interest in Portugal. It's amazing. And people go on holidays there, and a lot of times people think of Portugal and they're thinking straight to port. But the regular still wines, reds, whites, are absolutely amazing at every price point. So whether you're going to spend sub 20, over 20, wherever it is, the flavour, the intensity, the quality, the artisanal value of it is amazing. So absolutely different. Huge interest in Austria, the biggest selling wine in our whole website. Completely different. So we have a totally different trajectory.
And you know what, when you mention Austria, what do I think of straight away?
Oh, the
antifreeze.
From the 80s.
Tom will remember that.
It's amazing. But the biggest selling wine in our whole company by, the next one is 50% less, is a Georgian red. And it's a premium wine. And what is amazing about it is that people want to explore. They want a story. They want an experience. Our customers, they're direct to consumer. They're sitting at home and they want to have something cool to talk about.
Tell me this. The idea of organic, biodynamic and low in intervention, is that marketing or is that a genuine want of the consumer.
It's a genuine taste. And that is the big difference. If you were to ask a lot of consumers, and I know Finlater is one of the big importers, are doing a huge survey of industry members and consumers, do they even know what it means? We found, so when we started the business in 2019, you were out with us in 2021. I was pregnant in secret at the time. People, because of COVID, were ordering a box of wine rather than going to the shop and picking up their bottles in their weekly shop or popping down. And by the time they'd finished the box with us, because you would order six for home delivery, they were saying, God, I haven't had a hangover. I don't know what that feels. I can't believe how amazing the wine is, how fresh it feels.
Surely you'd have a hangover if you drank six bottles of wine.
Well, not if you drank them over a month. Not if you drank them over a month. But the point being is actually that the intensity and vibrancy of flavour and the fact that when you're producing something in such a small quantity to manage that organic, sustainable production, you're making things in small vessels and wine is alive. And so you're not putting in all those preservatives. If you're making something in a tank the size of Stephen's Green Shopping Centre, you need a lot of preservatives.
Let's bring in our next guest, James O'Hara, owner of Premium Wines. James, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having me, Bobby.
You're in what you call the Horeca business.
Horeca, yeah.
Yeah.
Just hotel, restaurants and catering.
So that's your focus. They're your customers.
Correct.
And that's probably been a challenging space.
It was challenging. I set the company up in 2006.
Yeah.
Then the crash came in 2008, as everyone's aware, and organic was starting to make an inroad at the time. And then next thing, it was all about how much is it going to cost? And then organic died away. So then in Europe, it started coming back around again, then maybe became more prominent about 10 years because we would run, traditionally, let's say in Dublin, we'd run about 2 years behind London. We should also run then what's going on in Europe. So like the big thing now in Europe that's going on is about sugar levels. So you're going to see that starting to come in here now in the next couple of years. People are going to be more aware because like a lot of wines will be quite high in sugar.
And would it be your experience as well that an organic wine generally, because there's nothing in it in terms of additives, the hangover thing, as Michelle was telling us there, is lessened?
I think people are more conscious of what they're putting in their body. And if they feel a little bit better in themselves, they're spending a little bit more on organic. I think there's a little bit of a psychological part to it too. If you're dealing with a vineyard that's doing minimum intervention, for argument's sake, which means they're being very careful about how they're producing the wine, they're using less acidity regulators, they're using a lot less preservatives. But a lot of people go on about sulfates. I mean, a little children's carton of sultanas that you give a little baby, there's 1,000 times more.
Wow.
Sulfates in that than there would be in a litre wine. So
that's if somebody bothers to read the label.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's happening is about the labelling you were discussing there. I mean, it's
Am
very
I right
challenging.
Am I saying that the government have long fingered that?
They've kicked it out to do with anti-competition, to do with the states and the state of, I suppose, Donald Trump.
So has it gone away or are we likely to return to it?
Definitely we're going to return to it, but there's a big piece in that the Europe already have it and they have it as a QR code.
Yes.
And the issue is that Ireland have gone one step further and you'd have to put on an extra strip and a bottling line. And I think what Tom was getting to is that only the big guys are going to be bothered with it. So the irony of putting that label on is going to mean that you're going to end up with all the big guys with all the added, all the extra bad things that go into wine will be the main things dominating the market.
Correct. Yeah. If people look at it now on a bottle of wine that's anything from 2024 vintage, i.e. the year it was produced, it'd be on the label. If you look around the back label, the little QR code, you can click on the QR code, it opens up and it gives you all about the calorific content, sugar content per 100 litres, millilitres. It gives you all the additives that may be inside in the bottle. So it's already there. People just have to look for it.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit pointless. Now, the bigger producers as such, they say like we said earlier on, like from Chile and that, like Santa Rita would be the biggest selling wine in Ireland. Like Santa Rita would have, just putting that onto a label, it's nothing because they're probably selling, well over 100,000 or half a million cases here in Ireland.
Okay.
It's tiny.
Tom, can I ask you about the business? You know, how important people like yourself reviewing wine every week, you're mentioning various wines that you've gone to the trouble of tasting. Like I, as a punter, I'm guided by when I read your column and I say, well, and I like to see where it's available to see if that's near me, how much it is, and you know what it tastes like. All in kind of a
kind of encapsulated paragraph or two. Well, I think brevity is the soul of wit when it comes to wine. Nobody wants to read long and flowery tasting notes. But I sometimes wonder how much influence wine writers have. I think they're influential in a small segment of the market, which would be very ABC one. I think probably influencers, people on TikTok and Instagram.
Would you consider yourself a wine influencer, Tom?
Well, I do use Instagram and I do use Twitter, as I insist on still calling it. And I do talk about certain wines there.
So you are, then, you are.
I don't think I'd consider myself an influencer. I'd consider myself someone who bangs on about wine a bit, you know?
Yeah, no, well said. Michelle, in terms of the business model, basically, your model of selling online, obviously you've got loyal customers, repeat customers. How do you drive the marketing and sales?
So very, very influencer-esque in that. So we are on Instagram. I'm on TikTok for my sins. But what we have put onto our website, and everything for us is, we're a technology-first company. It's all about data. But we've put on this really brilliant piece of software onto the website, which is a video tasting note for every wine. And very much like what Tom said, brevity is so important. So in 60 seconds, you're going to learn. And we have over 150 videos at the minute on the website. Hopefully we'll have another 100 in the next couple of weeks, where you can learn very quickly, what does it taste like in regular language?
And what should I eat it with?
What should I eat it with? Which is so important. I underestimated how important that is. Anytime we survey people, they always want to know, what do you pair it with? And I do wonder, are you thinking, God, I am going to have pork. I will see what goes with pork. And we've even... like our website, our digital guy, Evan, I have to do a shout out, is absolutely outstanding. But he has put on a digital, like a button where you can click what goes with pork and you'll get the list of wines. Like, and it's amazing. What people really want is education. And yes, they want it bullet pointed. Yep. They want it in short videos. And we are the only wine company that we can see in the world that has a video for wine that's a watch and shop. Good and it's you. All powered by data. And just to say, if anyone watches one of those videos, we can see that, say, the average order value without watching a video, say €120, that's a box of six. That goes up to 158 if they watch videos. It's amazing.
James, can I ask you about your customer base? Obviously, the hospitality sector, restaurants, hotels, etc. Challenging times for them.
Very
challenging. Does that work its way back to you? Because, you know, with the cost of energy, all the costs that they're in the front line on, one of their only sources is probably the supply chain. To try and tackle that as a as an area of bringing costs down, to try and stay in business themselves.
Correct.
So just talk to me about your experience around that.
Okay, well, during COVID was a very challenging part because basically as soon as COVID hit, 90% of our customers had kind of evaporated overnight.
Wow.
Which was...
just very difficult.
Correct. And looking about how much people owed you was something I had to kind of avoid for a bit because you'd just drive yourself mad to have a look at it. Luckily enough, we were very fortunate because a lot of our customers were well established. They've been through the crash. Some of them even have been through the last recession. So they knew what to do. So an older head on still on old shoulders is a good thing. And, you know, they knew what to do. People who weren't, who were starting off, they really had a big challenge and never reopened.
Yeah.
So... It's a difficult subject to tackle with COVID, but we saw with COVID as such, it was the best thing that ever happened to the wine trade in Ireland for people's experience because they were used to going out and buying a husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend going out and they're having dinner, two bottles of wine between the two of them. They were spending 50, 60 euros between the two of them. They were now spending 50, 60 euros on wine at home. So you might buy a bottle for 30 and one for 20. And as a result, they self-educated themselves up and the quality of what they were drinking went way up. As soon as the restaurants reopened a few times, we noticed it with our house wine sales. Our house wine sales before would have been maybe 60 to 65% of each order, and then it dropped down to literally 25% because people were just used to drinking better quality wine. Mm. So you may have drank a little bit less, but they just drank better quality.
Tom, what's your take on, I suppose, the restaurant industry? Like, what price should a house bottle of wine be in terms of, like, What do people expect to pay now versus what they would have paid? Has it gone up or down? And I often think that wine is such a serious component of the overall bill. Is it the first thing the consumer decides to cut back on?
I think it depends on the consumer. Certainly, the entry level wines on most wine lists now would be in the 30s, and you know that represents quite a change. I think it's very interesting what we've heard about customers trading up, drinking less but better quality, and that's definitely a trend.
I think it's
interesting to the association of that with COVID and how behavior changed at that time. But what it has meant is that the Irish consumer, by and large, has become more adventurous. We heard mention of Portugal earlier. People are discovering countries that had been kind of ignored. You know, if you go back to when I was in my 20s.
In Mitchell's and Kildare Street that time.
Indeed, when I was wrapping bottles for Bobby Mitchell, in my student days. Portugal in those days was Matthew's Rosé.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what it tastes like.
We don't have very fond memories of that, do we?
Taste of wine, and it was mainly used for sticking a candle in when you finished the bottle.
Before I was born, Bobby.
Well, you see.
If you drank a bottle of Matthew's Rosé now, you'd know it's a cheeky little number.
You'd know all about it, wouldn't you? Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we've also heard mention of Austria, despite people of my generation and Bobby's recalling the scandal of the 1980s. But there's an interesting little wrinkle about that, a little twist to that story, because do you know how the Austrian wine scandal of the 1980s was found out? It was a VAT inspector who saw a VAT claim from a wine producer for basically diethylene glycol or antifreeze. So he phoned up and he said, how many tractors and vehicles do you have on your wine place? And he said, two. And he'd been claiming for gallons of the stuff. So it was a VAT inspector.
Yeah, I know. The tentacles of the revenue, Tom.
Oh, they are everywhere.
Michelle, quick, loads of texts come in. We don't have time for many. I know it's a bog standard question, but how warm should red wine be? Jenny asks.
Yeah, like room temperature now, 24 degrees. That's a bit too warm. You end up with something far too warm. Yeah, for me, you'd want to have it something a little bit colder. And what happens, so maybe put it in the fridge. Put it in the garage to bring it down a few degrees. Put it in the fridge. I know it's kind of warm at the minute. What will happen if your wine is, say, under 20 degrees, say 18 degrees, is that it will taste really fresh and really juicy. And when you think the Spanish are mad for putting it in the fridge, they're not. But under 20 degrees is ideal.
Tom,
It also depends on the wine. So if you've got a Beaujolais, say a Fleury or something like that, you can actually chill that down quite a lot because there's very little tannin in it. And tannin is what makes red wine, when it's cold, taste bitter. But those wines are light in tannin and you can really emphasize the freshness. Chilling them to the extent that actually, you know, you get a bit of condensation on the glass. And on a summer evening or even an autumn evening, that's absolutely lovely.
All right. Well, look, it's a great discussion. Thank you all for joining us. I'd like to thank my guests, James O'Hara from Premium Wines, Tom Dorley, a great friend of the show and wine writer and consultant, and Michelle Lawler, owner of the Nude Wine Company. Thank you so much for letting us in to the secret world of wine.
Thank you so much.
And good to talk to you all today.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.